Once in a while, federal agencies have success stories that don't get a lot of attention. That might be because they result from long, sustained work and not any hallelujah breakthrough. A case in point is a significant reduction in identity theft at the IRS. Joining me with more, attorney Steve Ryan, a partner at McDermott, Will & Emery. Steve, good to have you back.
Tom, it's a delight to be here.
Tell us what's going on at the IRS and how you know about it.
For a couple of years now, there's been a new coordination between IRS, the leading companies in industry in the tax area, and the state departments of revenue. And that's led to the creation of an identity theft tax refund fraud information sharing and analysis center, which let's call it an ISAC for tax. There are other ISACs in the government, but this one is really focused in on trying to limit identity theft and to stemming the flow of bad refunds out of IRS and the states.
The states have had this problem for a long time, but because they have a smaller area of operation, maybe they're on top of it better. What are some of the advantages states have had that they're bringing to the IRS?
Well, I don't know that the states have had advantages. What was traditional in this business was that the criminals targeted the federal refund because it was a significantly larger amount of money. That changed a couple of years ago. The criminals started targeting the states heavily. And if IRS has problems with its firewalls, each state then has to have a comparable system to try and stop identity theft. So some of the states have done yeoman's work or are in very good shape, and others are coming along. The point of the ISAC, though, is to have a single place where analysis is done. So, for example, industry for the past several years has been providing leads when we see returns that have something wrong with them, and we have analytical models that tell us what's wrong. So, for example, if somebody fills out a return in a minute and a half, it's probably a machine. If we're getting IP numbers that are consistently pouring in the same thing, it either means somebody has a very successful business in the tax area, or it could be that they're filing too many returns. There's no single data point that tells you a return is bad, but there are algorithms that both the industry, IRS, and the states use to try and figure out which are fraudulent. Industry lets the returns go, but will tell IRS when it sees, and the states, when it sees a potentially bad return. But it's the ISAC's job to analyze these kind of leads, to analyze then how successful we are, and to feed that data back to all of the parties.
The returns are headed to the IRS, but they are monitored by industry under a contract. Is that how this works?
No. Industry does it simply to prevent fraud. And we're not looking, for example, at whether somebody takes too many charitable deductions. In other words, it's not looking at the return itself. It's often looking at things about the return. So, for example, take session time, the amount of time that the tax return took to put together. I mean, if you're putting your return together online, it takes some amount of time. You know, there are IRS estimates of how much time it should take. If you get way below that, that's an indicia of fraud. So it's those indicia of fraud that are reported to the IRS and to the states.
Well, how does industry see individuals' tax returns? I'm just trying to get a handle on the model.
For example, a return is done online. So you're in communication with another computer. And so you have the IP number for it. So if that IP number is for a block that originates in Belarus, you know that the IP number itself may be a U.S. taxpayer living in Belarus, but how many of them are there? And so each aspect of the data related to the return, but not the return itself, can be interesting in terms of that activity. The IRS and the DOJ want the metadata from each return so that they can look at that as well. All of that is non-return data. In other words, it's not looking at your income. It's not looking at, for example, your charitable deductions. And industry does not police the tax returns. We're not law enforcement officers, but IRS and the state DORs are law enforcement officers and have a sworn duty to ferret out this stuff. And industry is cooperating when it's appropriate to do so.
So in other words, the returns, these are ones filed through the tax providers like TurboTax, that type of thing. So that's how they see the IP addresses and other metadata.
That's correct, Tom. All IRS has a big catcher's mitt that catches the returns from the industry. So, for example, one company will be told to drop its returns at 4 a.m. Another will be told to drop them at 5 a.m. so that they stagger around the clock coming into the IRS server.
We're speaking with Steve Ryan, a partner at McDermott, Will & Emery. Do we have any figures on fraud reduction yet?
Yes. I think the commissioners posted these on his website. Commissioner Koskinen has truly been a leader in this area. You know, sometimes government officials, are transformational, and I think Koskinen's been transformational on this issue. And I guess here's what the trend lines tell you. It's significantly reduced the number of bad returns that are being paid. Tens of millions of bad returns are being filed, but the IRS is increasingly successful in defeating those. However, I think the GAO estimates are still $3 to $5 billion in returns going out, or at least the IRS has given GAO estimates of $3 to $5 billion each year of refunds that shouldn't go out on the federal level. And one could imagine that a proportional amount of state fraud is occurring.
Can some of these returns be flagged fast enough so that the person whose identity is being used can recover in time?
Well, the biggest problem, Tom, is that the fraud occurs usually in the first 10, 15 days of the season. In other words, if you're a criminal and you've stolen the identity of someone, and it's not hacking into the server of the IRS or hacking into the server of the companies, it's because they've stolen the identity. And, you know, for example, there have been breaches that have allowed 100 million identities to be on the web. So if you go on the dark web, you can buy the identity of a taxpayer in a state and a zip code with an income. And that's what's being used to criminalize this. And so as those returns come into IRS, they look like the taxpayer in the first 10 days of the season. Normally, then, the real taxpayer shows up later, files his return, and IRS sends him a notice that says, thank you very much, but you've already filed. And then you have to go through the permutations of getting yourself back to a normal status. But identity theft in the tax area has happened to public officials. One of the members of the Ways and Means Committee was the subject of identity theft, where they falsified a W-2 for a congressman. A state attorney general suffered this. So public officials are sometimes targeted, I think, almost to tweak the system. But, you know, it's the standard taxpayer who's suffering the burden of this. And I think IRS is doing a good job addressing this issue, which could otherwise be disastrous.
And how does the whole system stay ahead of the criminals? Because if they know that they're looking for dwell time in tax preparation, or they could route it
IRS
through other IPSs.
IRS share with us exactly what goes on beyond its firewall. But if you can imagine, industry is giving them some leads of things that look wrong. They then have to look at those returns. IRS has its own filters to scrub what's a bad return. And then as the returns go through the system, people have to work on those problems. Similarly, it happens at the state. The state return has to go through a filter as well. Some of the bad returns get through, they're paid, and then they have to be clawed back if they can be. From a financial institution, for example, where the money may have been deposited in a direct deposit. And some of those clawbacks occur. So it's never going to be foolproof. There's never going to be a silver bullet. But Koskinen's work in creating a bridge between the IRS and industry and the DORs that didn't really exist before is quite an accomplishment.
Steve Ryan is a partner at McDermott, Will & Emery. Thanks so much for joining me.
Tom, it's great to be with you again.
Find a link to this interview and to more IRS coverage at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.